Welcome to Nightlight. Step away from the mainstream and gather around as we help enlighten the world around us and travel this cosmic journey we call life. Join us as we share with you and provide that beacon that can guide us all to a better way. Nightlight, a reminder that you are never alone. And now your host, internationally renowned spiritual intuit, medium, channel, author, artist, lecturer, and ordained minister, Ms. Barbara DeLong.
Thank you, and welcome everyone. That was the very magical voice of Ken Quiet Hawk, inviting you to come in out of the mainstream and join with us for a time to be sheltered from the storms of evolution and change, that which we call creation. Come and join with other light-minded spirits as we weave our lights together to seek understanding, enlightenment, and hopefully wisdom. These are times of change, times that call to the light workers, and you answer that call from all walks of life and from countless aspects of the spiritual realms. This is a time of awakening, of sharing and evolving, of spreading your wings and soaring on the cosmic breath of creation. We all come from different backgrounds and modalities, from all walks of life, and yet there is a synchronicity, a commonality that draws and blends us together, weaving us once more into a collective purpose, a common direction, and a united family once again. We go by different titles: watchers, wardens, indigos, soothsayers, mystics, questers, querents, journeyers and journeymen, seekers, star children, philosophers, light workers, light bearers, and gosh, the list, it goes on and on and on, and it is as unique and eclectic as are we. Yet we all have the same spiritual calling, and we all, in our very own individual ways, bring light into this reality to facilitate the awakening and shifting of the consciousness for all of mankind. This is my own very private oasis in the turmoil we call evolution, so sit back, take a break, share your lights with us, and join in the love, the light, and the laughter that spiritual energy always generates when lights are blended and spirits lifted. I'm Barb DeLong, your host, and along with Bear Medicine Walker tonight, we invite you in. And by weaving your lights with us and adding your lights with ours, it's going to increase the energy and brighten all of our personal lights. This is a very unique time in time. It is a time in which the Earth Mother is really getting ready to go into hibernation. Leaves are dropping from the trees, birds are beginning to go south, and it is a time in which there is a preparation for a long winter, for resting, for hibernating, for sort of taking down time and time to sort of hunker down as the cold winds kind of blow around a lot of us. And it's a time in which we have peace and calm. And yet, there is a stirring in the vibrations out there. And especially at a night like tonight, I'm so very, very glad that Bear is with us tonight, because this is the night of a full moon. This is a time of great energy. And because it's a full moon, because it's the closest to the autumn equinox, it's amazing the power that is available to us if we focus on it, if we pay attention to it, if we use it for not only our expansion, evolution, understanding, and wisdom, for the planet as well. And it's a, this is going to be a show in which Bear and I are going to be talking a lot about those energies and hopefully finding, you know, possibly some ways for all of us to facilitate utilizing them within our realities to a greater degree. And I do want to kind of talk a little bit about her before I turn her microphone on. She is a unique and amazing lady. She is talented and gifted, and she's humble too. And that makes her a magical person on all levels. She is so very gifted and spiritual, and she's artistically gifted, and she's spiritually awakened, and of course continues to awaken, as do we all. But she shares her gifts, her talents, her love, her experience, her insights, her wisdoms so easily and freely, with no strings attached. She really understands the true meaning of the word unconditional love, and she is definitely a bear. She is protective of those she loves, and she leaves others alone if they don't bother her. So I want to, you know, thank this very magical first person for being a part of my life, a part of my reality, and also a part of my show, because she does all the artwork for me. Bear, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, and I'm blushing, of course. That was quite an intro. I do want to wish everybody tonight blessings from the full moon, although it is not the Cherokee harvest moon. That actually falls in October. There's a lot of the tribes and clans that consider tonight's full moon to be the harvest moon. And I would say it surely is this year in Michigan a harvest moon, because the temp is really cold and it's crisp outside and all that. But a lot of energy from the moon today, and everybody put their crystals outside and get them cleansed and energized for the night, and, you know, definitely put those wishes out there to the moon. And may she grant you all many, many blessings from the evening.
Well, you know, it is a time of the energy is so strong, and I cannot tell you, it's almost like I have a buzz on and I don't. It's like static electricity all over the place. There is so much going on energetically, and I'm talking energy wise. I'm not talking political or anything else. But those of us in the spiritual field are feeling changes, are feeling shifts, are feeling all sorts of stuff going on, almost to the point of making us a little bit lightheaded, because so much is going on. And I just, you know, I want to really focus on energetically what's happening. I mean, the consciousness of everyone is expanding, and things are happening much faster than anyone could ever anticipate. I mean, not only with things befalling us and our pathway opening up, but it's people are seeing the what goes around comes around coming back. They're seeing all of those things happening much faster. People are sensing and feeling great changes in their lives and their directions and their realities, and it's almost like in some cases people are saying, oh, my world is crashing in on me. But the reality is that's not what's happening. It's that we are changing and we are moving in new directions, and they're directions that we had no way of knowing what they were.
Well, you know, it's funny you talk about the energy. Because of the people that I work with, yourself included, and today I spent the afternoon with Ian Rose and Lizzie Starr. So talking about high energy, it's wonderful what we've all created and kind of joined in together, and even all the people that join a lot of our shows and chat and stuff, because that energy kind of gathers. And it kind of circles around us, and it just pumps that heightened awareness up. And I think it makes us all stand so much more powerful in a group than even we do as individuals. So I think that's a lot of people are feeling that awareness that's going across globally you know, with a lot of different things that are happening in the world. You know, I often thought for a while, it was like, geez, is it the age I'm reaching? But it's, no, it's more than that, because I know there's kids, you know, my own daughter included. The awareness is there. It's kind of cool to watch, you know, it just open up and blossom, really.
Well, you know, I think one thing that I am finding more and more drawn to and more fascinated by than ever before, I mean, I do have some Native blood in me. I am a direct descendant of Pocahontas, strangely, or, you know, but I, you know, what little of that Native blood I have is has been diluted over the generations, clearly. But there is a growing fascination for the philosophies that the Native people had that were towards weather, towards the land, towards just the energy, the spirits of the land, and I'm finding more I am drawn to those philosophies, and I keep feeling that, you know, when the colonists invaded this land, and they were invaders, they took the Native people as primitive without taking the time to understand their philosophies and realize that their philosophies were really far and above beyond what theirs were. And because they didn't understand it and take the time, they tried to destroy it and educate them.
They did a good job of it. You know, destroying, you know, clans, they didn't destroy our spirit. The people's spirit is still there. Mm-hmm. You know, I look at a lot of the reservations that are across the United States here, and what makes my heart sing is to see young people, people like Cody Blackbird or Frank Wallen, you know, go out and they're doing things with their lives, and they're showing young people that they can rise above what the reservations did to the people, you know. People like Robert Mirabal, you know, he's an amazing American icon as far as Native American music. Most people know who he is, but he's more than that. He's out there teaching, you know, he's teaching the old ways. He's teaching actually his wife, who is also Pueblo Indian, but she wasn't traditional. He's teaching her traditional ways, you know. People like Jan Michael Looking Wolf, who also is in the music world, but he's also a professor out on the West Coast, you know, and he teaches music and philosophy and goes to the reservations and helps the youth learn the tradition and the ceremony that is beginning to disappear. And it's a resurgent, but not only about, you know, average people looking at the American Native culture, it's also a resurgence, I believe, of the younger people taking pride in who they are from the Native community. They're starting to rise up a little bit and want to know more about their culture. They want to explore things outside the world of the reservation. Mm-hmm. You know, so many of them get caught in the trap of being stuck on the res. I know here in Michigan, you know, some of the highest population, sadly enough, of meth labs and you know, drug selling and all that good stuff is located down by the res. And when I found that out a number of years ago, it was really sad, you know. So you try to get in touch with these youth and, you know, pull them out of that. But it's like they've just been so trapped by, and I hate to say it, but by government and, you know, what happened years ago. Some of them just don't want to, or know how to, I guess is the word, to walk again ahead in pride. So we've got a lot of younger people now, and because of mass media, the way the media is, you know, to connect people all around, it's kind of reaching out and plucking some of them, literally, out of where they're at and saying, here, you know, mm-hmm. Be proud of who you are, you know. So it's a good thing.
Well, there was one of my favorite stupid shows. You know, well, I have shows that I watch because they are just they don't take any brains to watch. And, you know, they're what I watch to kind of come down off the high of doing readings for hours and hours and hours. And one of them is Project Runway. And last year on Project Runway, there was a Native lady who did, she did the most phenomenal textures, and she brought an art form into this area that was phenomenal. Her what she did, she stayed so true to her culture. It was just I watched it just for her to see how she was going to hold true to her gifts, her talents, and her culture. And it was amazing. She was phenomenal to watch. And I really, I was so delighted to see she went as far as she did.
Yeah, Patricia Michaels. She, you know, well, the thing is, and I'm sure there's been a lot of people that are listening, or if they haven't, they should make time to go. But if you've ever gone to a powwow, you know, part of what we do, we dance, you know, people, oh, it's a powwow, it's a dance. No, it's a celebration of life. And what she brought to the table was how we view it, colorful, passionately. We appreciate it, you know, and we're not afraid to show it. And if you ever go to a powwow, you'll see that when they dance or they go out and do the different dances that they, you know, are involved with, that's a form of prayer. So we're joyous about that. We're joyous because we want to dance and sing for Creator and for prayer, to put prayer up, and we're proud of that. So bright colors and textures, and, you know, that's all really important. And the fact that she got up there and got noticed was huge.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
And but we were very, very proud of her.
You brought something else up that I think is something that people should really, really pay attention to, because you mentioned drumming, and if anyone has ever been to a drumming circle and felt that rhythm start to resonate with your heartbeat, I mean, it is the most powerful, exciting thing in the entire world. And you know, you listen to it, and you become the drumming. And before you know it, your feet are moving and you are flowing with it. And it is a meditative experience that everyone should experience at least once, if not more. Because
drumming again, though, if you go back with what we do, and I was gifted this past year, which I'm so excited about because I got to replace my original drum. I got gifted a drum by Miss Yolanda Martinez, who is a sacred drum maker, among other things, and a medicine woman. Mm-hmm. And our drums are part of our life. They're part of us, you know. So they're part of prayer and ceremony as well. So when you go out and you're saying how you feel that connection, that's what it's there for. You know, we call it the heartbeat of the Great Mother, and it's about the connection with the earth and all of life. You know, it's about the sacredness of it. So yeah, the drums are powerful. And if you really look back into all the cultures, you know, Celtic cultures and African cultures and tribal people in the Netherlands, and, you know, wherever you go, drums were used just for that, you know.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, my sister teaches drumming, and she did a drumming circle here. Oh, and she's a shaman after the Peruvian tradition, but she teaches drumming. And she did a class here at the house, and she started with the paradiddle. And you know, that's a very basic pattern, and among other things, it balances your left and right hemisphere of your brains. And after she taught us all the paradiddle, and she even said to people, you know, that everybody wanted to know, I don't have a drum, and she said, you know, the rolled oats containers, the big rolled oat containers make great drums. Mm-hmm. She said it doesn't have to be an official drum. It just has to make a good resonant sound. And so everybody had their own drum, and we did the paradiddle, and then she said, now there is a walk that goes with it. And so she was, you know, leading us around the rooms here and everything. And I kept walking into the walls because, keeping my hands moving in one pattern and my feet in another. And after the whole, after everyone had left and everything was done, she said to me, "That was so sweet of you to look so clumsy." And I said, "I hate to tell you this, but that was not a put on. I really was walking into walls."
You got to experience it firsthand. You know, you got to walk the drum, and you know, there's a lot of people I'll talk to. Matter of fact, a few of them that I spoke with over this past week, that they said, "Oh, well, we went to the powwow up in our neck of the woods, and holy crow, it was amazing." And you know, to sit and watch those dancers. And I said, "What do you mean?" I said, "You sat for 3 days?" They said, "Well, yeah, you know, it was really something." I go, "And you didn't get up to dance with the intertribal?" "Oh, no, 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 I don't know how to dance." And it's like, I'm going to tell you, whoever's listening, if you get the opportunity and they call intertribal, that means get your butt up off wherever you're sitting and go out in that circle and dance that circle. Feel that joy. Offer that prayer. All those things that, you know, in life that have been sitting in your shoulder area and, you know, that you're holding in. Let it all go. That's what it's for. You know,
you don't have to be
Native American to walk the circle with us, you know. Get up and do it. It's great.
But, you know, it's I think I compare it to, and I'm beginning to feel, remember, I don't know if you're old enough to remember, Bear, and that was sarcasm, the harmonic convergence.
Yeah, it's sarcasm that I kind of hope to.
That was the time when everybody gathered for this huge thing, and there was chanting, and there was singing, and there was a oneness there that was phenomenal, and it was because it was a group energy. And if you've ever sat in a group of 3,000 or 4,000 people and done the Om, I mean, holy crap!
Oh yeah,
it's just phenomenal.
I've not with 2,000 people, but it with a big group of people, like, I don't know, close to 1,000, and it is, it's amazing.
I've been in a monastery and where it was done, and it was just, you know, you surrender to the moment. You don't think about what it's doing to you energetically, but you go into it and embrace it, and it takes you someplace phenomenal. And, you know, today people aren't doing the things in the crowds, in the groups, that you know, people will say, "Well, let's meditate together," but unless there's something other than just I'm going to meditate and you're going to meditate and we're all going to meditate, that's not the group. You have to be sharing in it in some way, whether it's drumming, whether it's walking, whether it's chanting, whether it's singing, whatever. But there has to be a harmonious blending of the energies that is not something that comes from silence. It comes from putting yourself out there and weaving your energy with everybody else's. It's just an amazing experience. And I kind of wish with Blog Talk Radio there was a way we could do that, because, you know, the paradiddle is a real easy rhythm that can be taught easily, and I'm wondering if we could teach it sometimes so that people can understand it and get everybody to do it together. Because what it does is it creates a portal, and that portal, that energy portal that it creates, enables everyone to be able to benefit from the energy of the whole, instead of, you know, my energy and your energy and whatever. It the blending of all of us creates such an amazing tsunami of energy that might feel like a ripple to start with, but it does become a tsunami, and it's powerful, and it does so much good, and it takes it, and you don't direct it. You just send that wonderful positive magic out there, and it's drawn upon by those people that need it, and it's just amazing.
Chris is in the room right now, in the chat room, and I, for the life of me, and I've got to ask her because I know she'll know. So, Chris, wake up. And I can't remember because my brain cells aren't functioning right now. And I was actually part of one of these that occurred. But they're events where they do spontaneous powwows. And they just show up at a site, and it's about being Native American, but it's more than that. And they're happening all over, actually all over Canada and the United States. I'm not sure if they've been anywhere out of that area. But Ken Quiethawk and Deb New Moon Rising were part of one a while ago as well. And that's what it's about. They just show up. And they bring drums, and everybody starts doing, you know, the chants, and it's amazing. And it draws huge crowd and this energy, and they go on for, you know, a half hour or so, and then they all just disperse, you know. And it's yeah, Idle No More, that's it. Idle No More. But there's also another name, too, and I'm not sure what it is. Yeah, it's like a drumming flash mob. There you go. but that's kind of what it is, you know, and it's happening all over. So, you know, people are looking for this energy, and I think that movement is going more towards it to unite people. And I really do. I think it's a cool thing that it's happening.
Well, I you know, have spoken with you before, and I'm going to mention it again. I think the paradiddle is so easy to teach and so easy to learn that it would be really great to first teach it in the chat, in chat, and then get somebody like Ken to come on and do the drumming so that they could drum with the drumming. And if you can drum with the drumming, you're a part of the energy.
Yeah, I think it would be an undertaking, but I think it's something that's doable.
I just, you know, so many of the people that do drop into the show and everything, I mean, most of the people, you know, really understand what I'm talking about. But it is also, you know, it benefits those of us that have done it before because it increases our energy. And then it helps, you know, you kind of like pull everybody else along with it so people can experience what that group energy is. And you know, I'm beginning to feel like we are being driven back to our roots, that we are being sent back to the basics, that we are being sent back to where we began this journey. And it's basically those of us that have done this stuff are really obligated to pull in others who are just new to the whole thing and say, this is part of the joy of what it is that we celebrate every time we do readings, every time we touch in with spirit, every time we do one of these shows, because it generates such an amazing sense of joy. That you know, just listening to people get readings is a cool thing, but basically there is energy at work, and it's really important that people understand that energy is available to everyone. And I go back to Dancing with the Stars, which I can't believe I'm going back to that, but I am. Valerie Harper had been diagnosed with cancer and given 3 months to live, and here she is 8 months later, she's dancing with the stars. I mean, if you have that kind of attitude, if you have that kind of access to the energy that is out there, you can overcome anything.
Well, to the energy out there, and, you know, another thing is our minds, our brains. There's so much we don't use in them that modern man is so unaware of what's connected to them, what we're capable of connecting to, what we can do with them. And one of my big things has always been, if you believe it enough and you trust it enough, and, you know, Anne and I have spoken about this before, too, if you put out there that you can heal it, okay, it will heal. You know, no, it's not going to happen overnight. You know, I had a friend of mine a number of years ago, back probably about 2002, when I worked at the hospital. She was actually an RN, and she came down and she had pancreatic cancer, which is one of the deadliest cancers that's out there, and it's very quick acting. And they gave her a month to live. And she came in to where I was, and she was crying, and she sat there, and we talked for a while, and Next thing you know, 3 years went by because she kept putting out there positive, I'm not ready to go. You know, mm-hmm. I want to dance at my daughter's wedding. I want to see her graduate high school and then dance at her wedding. You know, I want to do this. I want to do that. She accomplished them all, and she did them all because she mm-hmm. got her mind to believe it, that she could do it. The doctors looked at her and said, how are you doing this? And she'd look at me and she'd laugh, you know. We'd talk a few times a week, you know. She did drumming. She did smudging. She did prayer, you know. She did a regular routine that worked for her. And so I'm in the thought pattern of, it sounds like a Nike commercial, but it's funny if you put it that way, I guess. But if you really think it and you believe it and you trust in Creator and the universe, no matter what it is you put out there, you can accomplish it. You can do it. Been there, done it, seen it done by others, and I know it's possible. You know, how many times do people sit there and oh, you know, I'm in a bad place. Oh, I don't know why I can't do this and why. And that's all they do is whine about it, okay? I'm tired of a world of whiners, okay? I really am, you know, and I'm sorry if that offends people, but I'm tired of the whining. It's like, mm-hmm. why are you whining? You're putting so much energy into whining. Put the energy out into what you need to accomplish, how you need to get there, you know, to bring the good stuff to you. And if you do that, you know, and you really believe it and you keep continuing that positive step forward, it happens in your life.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Almost 50 years ago, I came down with ulcerative colitis severely. I lost 30 pounds in 1 week, best diet I've ever been on. And when they finally diagnosed what it was, they sat me down and they said, look, this is so chronic, this is so advanced, you're going to die of it. It's going to kill you and it's going to kill you pretty fast. And, you know, and I look back on it now and I just marvel at my response. And I said to the doctor, oh, no, I have too much to do. I have a whole bunch of spiritual work to do and I don't have time to die right now.
Don't they look at you like you're nuts?
They did. And you know, I think back on it now, and it was like, I'm wondering if I even heard what they said. You know, it was just, but it did take a number of years for me to get to the point where I was off medication and stuff like that. But I don't have colitis now. I don't have ulcers. I don't, and it was sort of like, it was the spiritual work. It was, and it wasn't that I was out there, you know, 50 years ago. I wasn't out there doing the readings the way I do today, but I was actively involved and expanding stuff and learning stuff and growing and touching in with other people. And it was just sort of like, I was too busy to get sick. And it was amazing. It was phenomenal when I look back on it, when I think of all of the things that I did, and yet, you know, here the doctors were telling me how I should get everything together. I should make, you know, I should make arrangements for my young son. I should do all of the things that I was supposed to do. And it was kind of like, no. I don't have time for that. I'm really sorry. If I croak, I croak. But I'm not planning on it, so...
Yeah, it's not your time, you know. I've been, and a lot of people don't know this, I've been dealing with degenerative bone disease. I've got two forms of arthritis in my body, and my spine is basically crumbled. I have no knee joints anymore. They can't replace them because the bone is too brittle. And I've been dealing with this since I was like 14 years old, and it's progressively gotten worse, and I'm 53 now. And I went through the gamut with all the drugs, you know, the morphine, the Demerol, mm-hmm. you know, the Darvocets when those were out, the Oxycontins, the Vicodin, all that stuff, you know. And finally I said I had enough, you know. I've been in and out of a wheelchair four times in my lifetime. And I've gone to the Mayo Clinic. I've been to the top neurologist, and they're like, you know, you're not going to be walking, you know. They told me that when I was 21. I'm 53. You know, I go to my ortho just for kind of like a, Shirley Checkup, and they just look at me and they shake their head and they say, we just don't understand how this is even happening. And I mm-hmm. said, because I'm not ready to be off my feet. I'm not ready to, I'm not saying I'm not limited. I am limited, but I don't take the medications. You know, the biggest medication I will take is a Motrin if I need it, you know, and that's basically to get a little bit of sleep. But, it's because I did it. I believed strong enough and didn't want to go that route. You know, it's possible. You can do it. You know, you can put it out.
Oh, yeah. Well, and not only that, but I truly believe that when the universe wants you to go a different direction or when it wants you to do something, it will confine you to an area so that you have no choice. And so, you know, those times that I had been kind of restricted as close to the bathroom as I could get.
Mm-hmm,
often I worked in the bathroom. And it was just sort of like, okay, I'm being held here for a reason. I'm being, held in place because I have stuff that I have to do. And when I finish this stuff and I have to go out and do other stuff, then I'll be better and I'll be able to do it. And darn if it didn't work that way. And mm-hmm. and there have been other times in my life where I just, when I had the car accident, I had said to people had said to me, you should be doing this work full time. And I said, I don't have time, but when I retire, I certainly will. And, you know, you have no idea the perks I have as a teacher and everything. And so, and you know, it's kind of like, you have no idea what I would be giving up if I retired now. And so the universe arranged a car accident so that I was forced into early retirement, and here I am. I mean, I was retired in my 40s because of the car accident, and it meant I was full-time in this field, and then something else limited me, and I painted the cards. You know, it took 9 months, and I was held in place for 9 months, and so anytime I look around and everything seems to be stable and everything seems to be not moving, it's, something's coming. I have to do something else.
Well,
but it works
and
that way.
No, and if you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing, they'll make sure somehow, in some shape or form, they'll get you to that point, you know. I laugh because I remember, like, in my 20s, I used to train horses up here. And I worked with them and broke them. And by breaking them, I don't break them like get on their back and ride them until they, they're bucking broncos at a rodeo. That's not the way I break horses. But, nonetheless. Yeah, nonetheless, though, sometimes you'd get on some of them and they had a mind of their own. And I'll never forget the day. And this was well after I had all kinds of issues and had been in and out of a wheelchair. And one time I was actually over at the stables on crutches, and a friend of mine was having trouble with a horse. And I said, I said, come on, let me work her. So I got up on her, and I remember, I'll never forget, the look on my birth mom's face when she come around the corner at the barn, and the horse decided at that moment to go bananas. I got tossed off of her, and I mean, I got tossed far. When you come down and hit that ground, sand or not, it's rough, you know. And I laughed, and I remember I got up, and it didn't hurt, you know. It didn't hurt me at all, and I remember her face, and why do you think you're doing it all? And it's like, you know, I'm okay. Sometimes you just got to do what you got to do, you know. So, yeah.
Oh, wow.
But
there, you know, I think that this is a time of waking up for all of us, and I think that there is a certain obligation to those of us who are a little bit older to really start putting out stuff that helps those that are just coming into the craft. And I call it a craft because I don't know what else to call it. You know, it's a spiritual awakening, but I don't want it to sound religious, so I call it the craft. So that as people are coming into this field, that there is some sort of helping them find the traditions that work, as opposed to, you know, whacking out and getting high on the energy and stepping on their tongues. And I'm not saying I want to form a school or anything like that. I guess I want to be a good example.
I'll tell you what, I do have a really dear friend of mine. I consider him a brother. He is actually James Riverstone. He's been on our shows a few times. Actually, Lizzie's spoken with him too a couple times. He is actually, I'm working on getting him to come next month or the following month to one of the shows, and we're talking time slot right now, so I'm not really sure. It might, because of his schedule, it might have to be something special. But he mm-hmm. was actually trained over in by Incan elders. And he is amazing. He has spent much time. They have taught him and trained him, and this is his walk. And he does drumming, and he does exactly what you're talking about. And maybe we can get him to get a date, and we'll be able to put something together that we can work and maybe connect a few shows up, and we can broadcast out a few different ways and join
oh,
that
that's
energy.
That's a great idea.
And see what we can do. Let me talk to him and see what we can do.
Sure. Now, I got a question. Now, I know that you know, the Plains Indians and the Algonquins, and I know all of the different tribes. Is there a synchronicity, a similarity in their drumming?
Between the directions, there's a different sound, not necessarily to the drumming, but to the songs and the vibration of the songs. Like mm-hmm. if you listen to a northern tribe, you'll hear a different resonating, the voices, the way they sing it, compared to like a southern tribe, like a southern Creek tribe or a southern Cree tribe. It's different. You kind of have to listen to it, but they all have their own kind of signature. But the drumming itself is very similar. And actually, the one that gifted me my drum, Yolanda Martinez, is an amazing drummer. And she's going to be coming back this fall. So that would be a good thing. And I could probably get her to come over here with you as well. It's an amazing thing. I also have a friend, Shireen, who is out in the West Coast, who does the Tibetan singing bowls.
Oh, wow.
She does glass bowls, and she does healing with it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, she's actually in the same group of Star Nation. They are, like, they meet every few months in different locations, sacred sites. And they gather, and this is what they do, is healing of the Great Mother and the people on it, and it's through drumming and these type of healings. And Yolanda's part of it, and so is Shireen. So, you know, these are all things that are ongoing, and I think that would be a really great idea to, you know, pull them in and see if we can set something up like that. Maybe even perhaps on, like you had been talking about, Lizzie had been talking about before, doing a prayer day. Maybe we can get them and put them on and just continue it for like 24 hours, you know.
Oh, that would be so cool.
From show to show. I think that would be really neat, yeah.
Because, you know, I just think I would love to make that resonance available to everybody. And the reason I would like to do it with a show is because, you know, you do have people that tune in, you do have people that listen. And so just by their listening and being sucked in, bad word, absorbed by the sound.
Well, it's a vortex. It's the great vortex created by the drums, so you are kind of sucked in by it. And yes, Eden's Light, I think it is. I don't have my glasses on, but I think that's what her name is or his name is. It is the Star Knowledge Conference. Thank you.
Uh-huh. No, I just think that you know, I would love to provide the experience for people. And of course, I know the paradiddle. I can do that. But the sound of the drums, I mean, I tell you, it echoes in your spirit. It's not noise. It's a resonance that absolutely you feel it throughout your entire body. Yeah, it's not like somebody with a set of drums banging away. This is a rhythm that that absolutely takes you to another place. And it's a place where you're safe, and it's a place where you can kind of surrender yourself for just a few moments. And I would love it to just be, you know, I mean, the drums, absolutely, the singing bowls, absolutely great. And you know, the other stuff is the om. I mean, love that. And, you know, there are other methods as well. And you know, while we're talking about this, I think that when I said that the colonists invaded this country, they did. The native people all were very aware of earthing, of connecting with the Earth Mother, and there's a book out there now called Earthing, and everybody should read it because it's so cool. It talks about how the Earth has a heartbeat, and that if you walk barefoot on the Earth, it will synchronize its heartbeat with you, and it absolutely is a healing modality that in many ways diminishes inflammation and all sorts of other things. And you said, if you could spend half an hour, 45 minutes, an hour with your bare feet on the ground, you would balance yourself and synchronize yourself once again with the earth energy. And the Native Americans, the indigenous ones that were here originally, and this goes back to the, I don't know, I know in this area alone, it was about the 15th century or the 14th century that the Indians moved into this area, or the tribes that they can document anyhow. They didn't have the illnesses that we have today. And
white man brought the illness.
Yeah, and it's just amazing because we have now, because we wear shoes, because we, you know, insulate ourselves from cement and pavement and everything, that we are not in touch with the earth at all.
This bear is, because I live in the woods on a lake.
Well,
and
okay,
I'll tell you right now, there's no way I would ever move back permanently to a city. What you're talking about, walking barefoot on the earth, you know, breathing that air, touching those trees, and one step farther is walking down and putting your feet into the water, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other part of that. And it does. It grounds you, and it resonates with you, and it heals and balances you. And anybody, I challenge anybody that says it doesn't. I challenge any of them to go out and spend a day or two just by yourself with Mother Earth in the woods
the
water.
Well, I live, you know, it's either at the end of a pond or a swamp, depending on what my mood is.
It's a marsh, Barbara. It's a marsh.
Well, there's a pond there, too. Covered with lily pads.
It's a marsh.
Okay. Well, I do. I have a very healthy ecosystem that is right next to my house. And I'm actually in it. If my house, you know, were to be built today, they wouldn't allow it because I am... They say you have to be within 100 feet of the wetlands, and I live in the wetlands. So,
mm-hmm.
But I do go out in my backyard, and I do take my shoes off, and I do walk in the grass out there, and it's green. It's not necessarily grass, but it's relaxing. It's energizing. It's the most peaceful time I get to spend, and I have a huge garden too, and I sit in the garden and I talk to the birds and everything. But being one with the earth gives you a greater sense of oneness, and so many people don't get that, don't understand it, and they say things like, "I don't have time, I'm too busy," and that's a bunch of bull. I mean, I'm sorry. Anyone can find the time to quietly sit and take their shoes off and wiggle their toes in the grass.
I think, Barbara, sometimes people have to reach like a point in their life where they just shut it all off. I'm right now, which is, it's kind of a blessing, actually. I adore my daughter, but she's in college. So I have myself and my critters right now. So I'm able to do it a lot easier than some people are. Although when I did work full time in a traditional job, I was also I would take time for myself. But it's almost about you have to shut everything off. You have to make it a point. It's kind of like prayer. You need to make a point of it to put it in your ritual, into your day. And it's called breathing a little bit. And I think a lot of people would benefit from it. Even if they are in the concrete jungle, you know, if they walk outside and just sit on a bench and listen to the birds and the people around you and all the noises that are there, you know, because that is part of their reality. But it's just about kind of opening yourself up a little bit and expanding beyond that typical box that we all sit in.
Oh, yeah. And you know, it's really amazing because I go back to the fact that the Native American people had a relationship with the seasons, with nature, with the animals, with the planet. They had they had a relationship with it that was synchronistic, and it was fabulous. And you know, their lives were pure bliss. I mean, did they struggle for food now and then? Sure, but on the whole, they lived in harmony with the land, and you know, I know there were probably Indian wars here and there and stuff like that, but for the most part,
probably.
Yeah, they well, you know, hey, you know, I have a bigger wigwam than you do. I mean, but they weren't as oh gosh, hoardish as we are.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, part of it is, it's still what we try to teach, is that everything, all life is sacred. And that's like my big, huge thing. All life is sacred. You don't take more than you need. And when you take, you replenish. So if you take a tree, you plant seven more for seven generations to come. If you go out and you go deer hunting or, you know, whatever hunting that you do, you know, you honor that animal, you know, by throwing tobacco or saying a prayer when you take that life, even if it is to feed your family. You know, a lot of people still hunt. There's a lot of people going back to it because of the way times are. They fish and they hunt to fill their freezers. And I know a lot of them in my area where they're at do that. And, you know, it's important to honor that sacred. And if they do that, their life will be more in balance, more fulfilled, you know. It is a way of life. It's not just a talk. You know, you have to live this. It's not like you wake up one day and it's like, okay, I'm gonna walk this way. I'm gonna say prayers today and tomorrow, and then the rest of the week I'm gonna be too busy to do it. So I'll just pray extra hard today. No, that's not how it works. You know, you have to kind of make it, you know, part of your life. You know, it's funny. I got, I didn't even get to tell you this today. I actually. My emporium is going to be opening here soon, and so I'm busy doing some stuff. And I've actually kind of pulled back, believe it or not. I'm sure a lot of people have noticed, like up on Facebook and what have you. There's things that I'm not doing right now because I am taking time for myself and time that I haven't taken in a long time, you know, but continue my normal stuff as well. But one of the things that I'm doing right now is I'm carving again, which is something I have done all my life. My grandfather taught it to me when I was younger, and I used to sit and watch on a stool by his feet while he carved things and showed me the tools. And my dear, dear friend, and I consider him a brother of my heart, Mr. Matt Arbor, is also a wood carver, and we kind of came up the ranks turning wood together. And I was supposed to go down and see him this summer, which I didn't get a chance to. So we are kind of going to collaborate on some pieces, and I'm actually in the process. He just turned me, all I want him to do is turn me some rough little bowls, and they're tobacco offering bowls, and he just sent them to me today. They're all rough, but now I'm going to carve them. And I'm going to pull the story out of the wood, and then I'll finish them. So this is part of prayer for me, You know, I work the wood, I tell the story, and it's a part of connecting, you know. The wood is from the trees, you know, and it's about the sacred of it. So, you know, you can do anything in your life. People can, you know, they say, oh, well, I don't have this or I don't do that. You know, it's about making what you do important. It's about finding that sacred ritual within it. If you're a nurse or you're a secretary, it doesn't matter, you know. Take that moment and find that sacred part of your day. Right now, mine is enjoying these little bowls that I'm getting about ready to carve, you know. And I do artwork or I do other things or even talking with people like I talk with you guys on the shows or I do the shows over at Almost Heaven or The Wolf and the Bear. That's all part of my my routine, my walk, you know.
Yeah. Well, I have a huge, you know, most people have seen on my Facebook, my garden. I have a huge garden. And when Patrick was here shortly before he died, we did a meditation walk around it. And it's 11 sets of 11 steps. And it's amazing. You know, he had never done a meditation walk. And he said, what's it for? And I said, centering. It's for confirmation. It's for going within. And it's for letting the universe know what you appreciate and how appreciative you are. And so I caught him a couple times walking around it and just, you know, trying to zero in on stuff. And he said to me at one point, what do you do? And I said, well, it's kind of like prayer, but not. I said to him when my grandson was here, he wanted to know what the stones were for, and I said it's called a happy walk.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, what does that mean? And I said, every step you have to think something happy in your life that you're grateful for.
Mm-hmm.
And every step you have to find something else that you're grateful for. And you know, and I said, and you can't repeat. And he made it all the way around, his comment, and he was 7 years old when he did this, and his comment when he got done was he had great big eyes. He said, I never knew I had so much to be grateful for.
Isn't that cool?
Whoa.
We used to do that when my mother was still alive, and I was at my other house. There was 9 of us living under this house roof, and I had my daughter and 4 other young girls that lived in the house with us. And my partner at the time was with us. And I had a brother with me. We had a house full. And we had this big, long, huge oak table. And I insisted that one meal a day, every day but Saturday. Saturday was the free day. We all had to take one meal a day together as a family unit. Everybody. No excuses, no nothing. And when we first started it and we got into the house, they were all grumbling and groaning about it. And after the first couple months, I wound up looking up and I'd see more faces sitting at our table than we normally had. But they loved it because we went around, and very similar to what you're talking about, and everybody had to say one thing that they were thankful for in their day. And you're right, they couldn't repeat it. One positive thing, and they had to share it with the family. And no one else could talk when we went around the table. And my mom started it. Every night that we did it, my mom would start it, and it would go all the way around the table. And it was powerful, and the kids were, like, amazed because they tell each other things that they never really thought about before, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, well, so-and-so did this, and, you know, I was really happy because I got to sit and watch my sister have to bale the hay today instead of me. And I was thankful that it wasn't me out in that 90-degree heat, you know? But it was still things that brought us together as a family, things that they were thankful for. And that became, and I considered it very sacred tradition because it brought the family together. So it doesn't take a lot of big things to make people aware of, just like your grandson, you know. It's about reminding them and waking them up about it.
For 5 years, I was one of the rotating ministers in the spiritualist church down in one of the towns down south of me. And one time, one of the services, I gave to everybody a piece of cord that was probably 3 feet long. And my sermon was, you know, a lot of us are going through difficult times. A lot of us have lost jobs. A lot of us are having trouble paying bills. A lot of us are going through some really tough times. And I said, I want you to spend a little time here now. And I said, you all have a very straight piece of cord here. And it you know, run your hands down. It's smooth. It's absolutely smooth. There's nothing there. And everybody did that. And I said, now, I want you to tie a knot for every blessing that you can think of. And I said, we'll do this as a group till you get the idea. And people would, you know, yell out, you know, things, and people would tie knots. And I let them go, and I talked them through about 20 minutes of it, not telling them what to tie the knots for. But when a blessing occurred, no matter how small it was, even like having the right change for the parking meters or whatever, or the people in their life. And after we were all done, I said, now I want you to tie the ends together, and I want you to flip it over your neck. And every time you start to feel sorry for yourself, I want you to run your fingers across the knot and remind yourself that these are the blessings that you were able to think of just in one short period of time on a Sunday. And remind yourself that all of these blessings are the tools that you use to get beyond whatever the difficulty is right now. And 25 years later, a woman came to one of the psychic fairs that I was doing, and she sat down and she looked at me and she said, I just want you to know something. And I said, okay. And from under her dress, she pulled out this really dirty cord, and she said, I have worn this every day since you had us do this, and it has gotten me through so many difficulties. It is unbelievable. And
isn't that cool?
It was absolutely so cool. It was just, all I could think of was, okay, you know, if it hit one person and she used it, that's why I was there. And it totally made my day. I did suggest
that's an amazing thing.
Yeah.
Well, when I do my morning blessing show, and I know a lot of people have been pushing me to start it again, and it will be started again in October. The first show, and because it's funny you brought about the string, the first show that I'm going to do is I'm going to have everybody bring stuff to the show, or people that are listening to it, to begin to teach them to tie prayer ties. And we're going to continue this each week with prayer ties. And it'll be the similar thing for blessings and putting it out there. It's important you do things like that, like tie that string or, you know, remember those blessings or put them up and offer them. So that's a really cool thing you did.
It was, you know, and it was spur of the moment. It was, you know, and I always...
it wasn't spur of the moment. It was guided.
Oh yeah. But I have to tell you, I always waited... for inspiration for whatever I was going to talk about. I won't call it a sermon because I never really preached to them, but I did share with them. And I can remember once it was getting really close to Sunday and I hadn't had the inspiration yet. And you know, sometimes it would come, you know, in the dead of night, and I would write something down, and that would be what would build into the sermon. And I remember one evening I could hear them muttering. And, you know, I would sit up and I would, and it would stop. And then I would go back down to bed and go to sleep. And I'd hear them muttering again. And I finally said, for God's sakes, either speak it out loud or come back in the daytime because, you know, this is ridiculous. And I figured, you know, then at least it would stop. And it did stop. And I laid back down and two more times it woke me up. And it was like, you know, I really need guidance. I really need insight. I'm waiting to be inspired, and I'm not getting anything. And I laid back down, and the mutter. And I reached over, I turned the light on, and I looked next to me, and my cat was snoring. And that became my sermon. Sometimes sometimes inspiration and insight comes from the most unusual places, and we really have to pay attention to it. It can be really weird, but it's there. It's sort of like sometimes when we slumber, the best stuff comes. But to have to admit that my cat snoring was the source of the sermon was you know.
Well, you know, oftentimes at night, you know, it's kind of, I sleep very sporadic. I can't sleep for long periods of time, but it is nice to sleep once in a while. And they'll get me up at certain times like that to give me messages. You know, the other night, my cell phone rang, but it wasn't on. And I looked over at it and I thought, okay, I know I shut that thing off. And yes, I did. And it rang again, sitting off. And it made sure I heard it. Well, then I was like, okay, why is it ringing? Well, I looked at the time and it was 1:11 in the morning. 1:11. So they give you messages at any time, and you know, our critters or our electronics or however they decide to communicate with us is always a blessing. Not always like great timing, but it's always a blessing.
No. I found some amazing wind chimes, and I have found that the tones of the wind chimes, you know, really take me to another place, and they can be heard like a block away. It's the most mellow sound you've ever heard, and you know, again,
are
I'm back
Austrian
to
Austrian chimes.
They're Vienna, yes.
Yeah, the Vienna chimes. Yeah, I've got a set.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
And I just I sometimes, you know, just wait for the breezes at night, and I'll open my window and listen to them, because it's like they're singing to me. It's like they're you know, it's not a lullaby, because it feels like there's wisdom in the tones. And I think that so many times we're looking for words to give us wisdom when it's sounds that bring us insight.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, I gotta write
well,
that down.
Well, the tones. Yeah, the tones and the sound. Different vibrations pull us to different vibrations of awareness.
Mm-hmm. But you know, it's amazing. So many people talk about learning how to meditate and learning how to this and learning how to that. And, you know, it's something that comes very naturally to us. I don't think we have to be taught. We have to allow it to happen.
No, I agree. I think it's something that you kind of just come into. You know how to do it.
Well, and not everyone is meant to sit in a lotus position and have their fingers together,
I couldn't get in a lotus position if you paid me.
I couldn't get in a tulip position. I mean, I went with a group of friends to an ashram once. And it was for a meditation, and I was really excited about it, but I had had a car accident, and so I couldn't really sit the way everybody else was going to sit. And so I thought, well, I'll just lean against a wall, and I'll just go along with it. And I was told that if I was going to do the meditation, I had to sit like everybody else did. And I explained that I couldn't. It was physically impossible, but that I would sit at the very back and just lean against the wall and participate. And they asked me to leave. and
wow.
I looked at them and I said,
"It's a really sacred gathering, right?"
Yeah, I said, "And you're going to tell me that you're doing spiritual stuff in here now?" And they said, "Yes, you have to be able to sit and face." And I said, "You know, I thanked them very much," and I went out in the car and I did my own meditation. But you know, it's I think some people are so restricted by the thought of what meditation is, that they're thinking so much they're not meditating. And you know, I meditate when I garden. I meditate when I work with the animals quite often. And you know, it's to me, meditation is when you are not thinking and you're just absorbing. And I sometimes did it, I did needlepoint for a very long time. Love doing needlepoint because you don't think when you're doing it. You flow with it. The same with knitting, the same with painting, this, and even writing. If you're truly channeling, you know, I used to say to my mother, if I was working on something, I would, you know, be working on it on the computer and typing away, and I would yell at my mother, "Hey, come and see what's going on here." And she would come in the room, and I would keep typing, and I would talk to her because I wasn't actually another part of me was working on whatever it was I was writing. And she said, "That's really remarkable. Can you actually carry on a conversation?" And I said, "Yeah." And you know, it was amazing. And it's sort of like, you know, you really have to not think, because so many people sit quietly, listen to music, and then you see them kind of getting lighter and lighter, and then you can see it happen. They're thinking, "Is this meditating?"
No. I go back to, I actually am a certified massage therapist, and I went through classes, 2 years of classes for it, and it was, it was in 93 to 95, and I went down, and one of my classes, they were talking, it was when I was actually, I had been exposed to energy work, and I did energy work, but that was a time in my life where I didn't really label it. So they were telling me about Reiki and telling me how to do it. And this was back, it was in 93. It was the year my daughter was born. And we were sitting in class, and we had a Reiki master came in, and she was actually quite amazing. And, you know, we all had our massage tables and everything. And they're all talking about how wonderful this was, and I was working full time doing school, massage school, 5 days a week, plus doing clinicals for it. So I was like busy, and I had afternoon shift at work, and I went to school during the day. So my schedule was quite full, plus I worked up in the ICU. So it was kind of insane. And I remember sitting there, and I'm thinking to myself, yeah, she's going to have me meditate. Yeah, right. You know, I can't meditate right now. There's no way I can meditate. And she come over and she's talking everybody through breathing exercises and talking about meditating. And she come over and she goes, "Wow, is your energy ever screwed up?" And she says, "Would you mind me using you as a guinea pig?" And I said, "No," you know, because I'm like, yeah, whatever, you know. So they had me get on my massage table, and I lay down, and I'm like thinking 50 million things. Okay, I've got a test coming up. I've got to study for this, and oh, my God, when I get to work, I got to do this, and I got to drop my daughter off over here and blah, blah, blah. That was it. She started working the energy, and I could feel her working the energy, and she's telling me, "Stop your mind and stop your breathing, you know, to a rhythm, you know, get it to a rhythm." I'm like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And she put, I could feel all this pressure as she manipulated like across my crown of my head. And I was out, and it was a 3-hour class. Mm-hmm. I woke up. They had covered me up with a blanket, and I was in the back of the room. They said I snored through the entire class, and they all woke up. When I woke up, they literally had to come over and wake me up. And I literally had drool coming down the side of my mouth, which was just so classy. And she says, "So you can't be relaxed through meditation or Reiki, huh?" And they all just laughed, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, do I feel like a fool. So from that point on, anybody can meditate if you just let yourself go there.
Yeah.
But you have to allow that to go there. And she literally had to talk me through it, to let myself just stop and be. And once I did, that was it, man. I was out. Just gone.
For the longest time, 20, 25 years ago, I gave everybody that I really worked with on any level, I gave them a little pin that was a B. And you know, somebody said to me, "I see everybody with these little bees on their collars. What is that?" And I said, "That's a reminder to them that their spiritual purpose this lifetime is to just be."
That's right. That's basically the lesson she taught me.
And it was so cool. If I could have found those pins and bought them cheap, I would still be doing it today. It was such a wonderful thing because, you know, people would come in and say, I know I have a spiritual message. I know I have a spiritual thing I'm supposed to be doing. And I, you know, and my answer was always, of course you do. Everybody does. And basically it was like, really, you can tell me what I'm supposed to do this lifetime? And I said, yes, I can. It's just be as perfect and as joyful and as loving and as full of spirit as you can possibly be. You know, celebrate what you are, who you are, and put that celebration into everything you do, but just be. Don't try to be something you're not. Be who you are. That's the important thing. And then...
That's a hard thing to do for some people, Barb. That's a hard thing for people to do, period. You know, to be, just be you, to let it, you know, the way we're raised and the way we're brought up, it's like, you know, there's expectations, and then we take those expectations and put them on ourselves. I remember when I was in art school, and for years and years and years, you know, people would tell me, oh, you know, your art, you do, you're such a good artist, and blah, 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 and I'd go to college, and, but I didn't get, like, the satisfaction from it. And back in 2006, I woke up one day and I heard Spirit talking to me, and they said, why are you trying to paint like blah, blah, blah? Why are you trying to do it like blah, blah, blah? Why don't you paint just like Bear paints? Just paint. And I'm like, what? But see, all these years I had all these professors and these art, you know, mentors and all these other people teaching me their styles and all about the masters and how they painted and how you're supposed to do this and do that and, you know, this style and that style. Well, I have my own style. And until I realized that and woke up one day and said, wow, you're right, you know, and I heard it. I mean, it was like plain as day speaking to me. And they said, you need to paint as you're supposed to paint.
Exactly.
And that's the way it should be with a lot of things. When people say, well, how do you meditate? There isn't a trick to it. It's how it works for you. You know,
exactly.
Well, how do I sculpt? Well, I don't know. You sculpt the best way it works for you. How do you cook? Well, I don't know. You cook the best way it is for you. There's no right or wrong way to the work we do. I mean, seriously, to connect, there's no book on it, you know?
No.
We were talking to Ian about this a while ago, and I think I've spoken to you, and I know we've spoken to Lizzie about it. It's like there's no right way to connect. You just have to allow it to happen the way it's supposed to for you.
Oh, gosh, yeah. And you know, it goes even deeper than that. I have often said to people, you can either be a parrot or a prophet. Yeah, how many of us know people who can quote Nostradamus chapter and verse, or the Bible chapter and verse, or Edgar Cayce chapter and verse, or start their sentences out with, well, so and so says this, or so and so says that, and that's great, but so and so has said it. Have you taken that wisdom in? Have you made it your own? Have you blended it with your reality and with your frame of reference? Have you made it your own so that you can speak your own wisdom, your own truth? Can you, so that you can be the prophet? There are so many people out there that you hear so constantly saying, well, chapter and verse this or chapter and verse that, and that's wonderful, but what have you done with this wisdom? You know, how have you taken it, made it your own, blended it with your own energy and made it better, and want to share that with me? I can read the damn book too. I don't need you to quote it. But you know.
Well, that's what part of being a teacher is. You know, this is one of the big conflicts I had with being back in college. You know, teach me. You know, give me your thoughts. I don't need to read. I know the information. I can study a book. But put it in terms that I can relate to, that I can understand, that others understand, related to real time, to real life situations. And yes, people, I am in the field of psychology, so it's It's like the mind, you know, and it's like, yeah, okay, I get it. That's textbook. But what about putting it in human form? And it actually helps people remember better because it relates to real time. They can relate it to things for them, their own way. So, yeah, I don't like textbook. I don't like – there is no easy way to be spiritual. You have to look deep within yourself and find what it is that brings you to that sacred point for yourself, how you honor yourself, how you honor your soul inside, what it is to find your soul. You know, how many people out there that we come across daily that don't even know who they are? They want us to not only map it for them, but help them live it, breathe it, and do it. And then even do that map, they still want more.
Well, you know, I tell people, you know, they say, how did you get to where you are? And I said, I could give you the map, but if you followed my footsteps, you wouldn't get to where I am. And the reality is that, you know, as far as, you know, you mentioned teachers, and I have a philosophy about teachers. I don't believe anybody should try to teach something they have not experienced. And you know, if a teacher tries to teach something they haven't experienced, their words are going to fall on deaf ears. And it upsets me greatly, you know, if someone is trying to teach a spiritual concept and they're not walking it. I mean, the hairs on the back of my neck stand up, you know. There are a lot of hypocrites out there who will try to teach you something that they are not living and walking, and that is, you know, just absolute awful to me.
Well, you know, I have a lot of people that ask me, can you teach me? No, I can't teach you, but I can share with you what I've learned. And then you can take it one step farther and use what you can take from it to help mm-hmm. you get to where you need to go. Do I teach? No, I share. I share what I've been taught, just like, you know, I've been shared with my elders, what they've sat with me and talked about, stories and how they've gotten to point A to point B, you know, ceremonies, traditions, you know, even ceremonies and tradition that we've been shown how to do generation after generation, or I've had elders sit down and say, well, this is how we pray, this is how I pray. You know, this is how I do ceremony. This is what I put into it. And every one of them, if you had them in a room, they would all do the same, like say they were going to pray for a good harvest, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They would all do it with good intent, but it would all have their own flair to it, their own personal touch to it, their own... you know, their own intent and how it's presented, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Similar, but unique. And that's
well,
what people have to understand about the spiritual.
Oh, and you know, I truly believe that the prayer is something very, very personal. It's not something that's done in a group. It's how you talk to your creator or the great spirit or God or whatever you want to call that higher consciousness that created us. And you know, I am often horribly irreverent, but that's my relationship. I've been known to say, are you kidding me? Do you really think that this is a good idea? And you know, often I get laughter of all sorts, and yet, you know, we all have a personal relationship with that higher power, and it's important that we be able to communicate, to share our thoughts and our wishes and our hopes and our dreams, and so many people ritualize it to the point that they lose the purpose of prayer.
Oh, I think they a lot of them lose the purpose of prayer. A lot of them forget, you know, and Lizzie brought this up today, you know, she's always like, gosh, your prayers, you know, I go to, people have asked me, where does it go? It's me praying, but it's not me praying. It's all my, all the ancestors. It's all the realms. When I go to prayer and I actually kind of do what you were talking about, Barb, you talk to your mom and you could type too, you know? I bring it through, but it's me and thousands of voices that I hear, you know? It's an experience. It's part of who I am and what I do and what I bring to the table, I guess. To me, there's no explanation for prayer. It's just a way of connecting and bringing that energy through to make people shake them up a little bit, wake them up a little bit, and say, hey, if we add our energy together, you know, anything's possible. You know, hey, I know that I'm feeling my soul inside is just weeping right now because of the pain that we've witnessed in the past weeks, okay? And I know when I go out there to connect for prayer, I connect with all of that. I can feel all of that. And I bring those words to the table, and those are put up. So, you know, prayer is, to me, it's very personal, very sacred, but it's not just me. It's extremely, when I do it, it's extremely connected to everything. It's like a web. I can't even explain it. It's like a web.
Yeah. No, I think that, you know, like I said, it is a very personal thing. But, you know, when I am in that place where I am opening up and embracing the greater oneness that is out there, it is overwhelming because, I mean, there is comfort, there is solace, there is joy, there is, you know, actually never sympathy because, of course, you know, we're here because we've charted it and we're going through what we need to go through. But it's almost as though for that moment in time, you are so embraced by the love, the unconditional love that is there for us, that you let down all your barriers and that you're able to blend with whatever energy is there and you're able to draw from it and you're able to learn from it and you're able to expand from it. So you know, I usually come back from one of those experiences higher than a kite.
Yeah, I'm not, when I'm doing prayer, I'm not, if I go into a deep, like when I do my stuff for, put stuff together for morning blessings or even the other day, I don't even remember. I it's funny because I look back on prayers that I've posted or I've written or put up on my, I can't even fathom writing them. It's not even how I speak. That's how I know I'm so deeply connected with it. And it's a really humbling experience. When you go back and you read something and say, wow, that came from me? Oh, I guess so.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, every now and then I will. Well, in the book, Whispers of Spiritual Wisdom, a lot of that poetry I go back and I read and I think, damn, that's good. And it was part of a meditation, or it was part of somebody's reading, and it came from spirit, and it came from, but it came through me, so it came through my spirit, so that, you know, in a strange way, it is a part of me. It's a part of that master that is within all of us, and when we allow access to that source of energy, of wisdom, of faith, of strength, when we allow that part of ourselves to blend with our physical reality, magic happens on all sorts of levels, and it is profound. And you know, people say, oh, I can't write, or I can't this, and the reality is, yeah, we all can, but we have to sort of surrender to another part of ourselves, and then all sorts of magic happens. I think we all have talents and gifts inside of us that we're fearful of allowing to manifest for some reason, because of course it will change our lives tremendously. But I know channeling and getting to that place you're talking about, Bear, is just magical, and that you're able to do it and put up such beautiful blessings. If you have never seen or experienced her morning blessings, please go to her Facebook website, wherever, And it's on the Wolf and Bear Network. Is that where it is?
My website?
Your blessings.
Oh, my blessings? They're on my website. They're on the Wolf and the Bear Facebook page. And they're on Reverb Nation. They're up on iTunes. They're all over the place.
Google it. Yeah, Google it. No, they're so beautiful. They truly come from a magical place inside of you. And I do have a question. I know every one of them is ended with aho. Is that Indian for amen, or aho is your way of...
It's Native American. It's a greeting. It means amen. It means thank you, creator. It means blessings. It means aho. It means being thankful, being respectful, being humble. My prayer has ended. It's similar. I guess you could compare it to an amen. Yeah. But
okay.
It's like, I think Chris says hi. There's different ways of saying it. It's a greeting, but it's like multiple uses.
Is it like namaste?
But a whole is what I was praying. Pardon me?
Is it like namaste? I mean...
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, it kind of fits all of it. You know, to me, it's like, thank you, creator. Thank you, ancestors, for listening to my prayer. It's like ending, you know.
I think the greatest thing that you have and that so many other people have is that you have a connection that you know you have. And so many people are looking for the connection and not realizing they already have it. It's just embracing it. And you know, you are fortunate you have that connection. I get it frequently, too. And it makes you a part of a greater whole that is awesome and awe-inspiring. It makes you a part of a family that does not have any borders, that does not have any distinctions or labels. It takes you in for that moment in time to a family that is unconditional and it's supportive and it's a phenomenal feeling. And when you have that kind of experience to draw from, and the wisdom that you have from lifetimes past that you've carried into this lifetime, and you put all of that together, it's no surprise that magic happens. And I don't want to diminish it by saying what I'm going to say now, but we are all capable of that.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a matter of opening and embracing it and allowing it to manifest within our realities. If we all did that, we would not need governments or religion, because we would be one family again. And I think that's where humanity is headed. I don't know how long it's going to take, but I think humanity is headed in that direction, hopefully. And, you know,
I think we're getting there more and more. I have to agree with that. You know, I even look at my own daughter. You know, I brought her up earlier, and I kind of watch, and she knows what I do, and she knows the prayers. She doesn't want to admit in front of people when I'm doing it, what I'm doing. You know, oh, my gosh, Mom, don't let them see what you're doing right now. She's got her friends in the house. But then at other times, you know, she'll say, well, I'm not religious. I said, no, but you're spiritual. She said, yes, I am. I'm very spiritual, you know. And she has that argument with my ex-mother-in-law, her grandmother, you know, all the time. Well, you need to go to church. No, I don't. You know, you don't need to go to church to be spiritual and have that spiritual connection. And I'm not down on church. If church is what rocks your boat and gets you that connection, great, you know. But it's not what I do. The world is my church, you know, and I connect with spirit. Somebody said to me, I live on a lake, but it's also part of a marsh, and we had somebody actually a number of years ago decided that they were going to plant rice grass by the wall, seawall, and it kind of overtook the lake over a number of years. So we actually have the DNR and a few other groups out here, and they're actually harvesting the rice grass out of the lake actually as we speak. And I was sitting out there yesterday morning with my dog watching the sun come up and having my cup of tea, and one of the neighbors pulled up in his vehicle, and he had his cup of coffee, and he goes, "Hey, Barry," and I go, "Well, come on out and sit over here." And we sat and we watched. He says, "You know," he said, "people always wonder why I live up here and that." He says, "And you look," and I said, "Yeah, I know, it's sacred up here. We watch." And we watched as the eagles played on the lake, and the hawks will come through. You can mark a clock by it, you know, when they come to feed and have lunch or breakfast. And, you know, we had great heron. The blue herons came through, and, you know, the red-winged blackbirds that came through and migrated, and the wildlife that's out there. We have otters out there. We have beaver out here. And it's like, this is my church. You can't get closer to the Creator than where I'm sitting right now, you know. And that's part of what keeps me in that spiritual. I'm home. I'm where I'm supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, I agree. I have a similar setting. And it's true. I think that if you live in a very crowded environment, you lose track of the miracles that surround us constantly. And it's just amazing. When Patrick was diagnosed with cancer and they came and they were talking about hospice, he said, "I can't think of another place I'd want to be. There's no place more spiritual or peaceful than right here." And he was right here until 3 days before he passed. And I have to tell you, he had a quality of life that I never would have imagined. But it's I think we create it ourselves. We allow it, I guess. We embrace it. We nurture it. And so many people get so caught up in survival that they don't take the time to understand that their body may be surviving, but their spirit is probably, you know, wanting for nourishment. And so many people say, "I can't afford to do that now." And the reality is, it costs nothing to watch the clouds. It costs nothing to look for shooting stars. It costs nothing to wander through a park and watch the leaves fall. And it costs nothing to watch the birds migrate or the swans swim or any of that. And you know, to allow yourself to become one with nature and the Creator, it takes you into that family, takes you into that place, and it doesn't cost money. And I think so many people are spending money on workshops for this and workshops for that in the spiritual realms. And don't get me wrong, I think it's fun to learn lots of stuff, and if you do it with a class and a workshop, I think that's great. But the reality is, the true spiritual spirit doesn't come from a workshop. It comes from blending yourself with your surroundings and finding the beauty in nature. And there is nothing more magical. I think the most magical, you know, I've had a lot of magical moments, but one of the most precious ones was, it was 4 o'clock in the morning. The dog had to go for a walk, and it had been snowing, and the streetlights were on. There were no cars on the road. It was quiet. You could hear the snow falling.
And yeah, I love that.
I stood there with the dog, and I just looked at her, and I said, "This is the greatest piece of magic I have ever seen." And we sat there. And it was really funny because we lived on a corner, and so we were standing right in the middle of the intersection, and it was really cool because I was at a crossroads. And I was standing at the crossroads, and after a while, you couldn't see footsteps coming or going in any direction. And it was like the universe saying, you know, pick your path. It's all open to you. You're going to be the first to tread it. And it was just absolutely friggin' imagine. You know, it was magical. And we all have those moments, and you have to pause, and you have to enjoy them. Fireflies. I mean, nothing more beautiful than that. And it doesn't cost anything, and so many people keep talking about money, and the reality is what you're looking for, the spiritual stuff, the spiritual pathway, the enlightenment, and all of that is absolutely free. It has, you cannot put a price tag on it. It is absolutely free. You just have to be able to find it, and mostly it's within yourself.
Yeah, you just have to open your eyes and look.
Yeah. Yeah,
truly, and you do. Truly, 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 you do. Because you can find that spiritual in any part of your life if you put that positive there. If you truly, you know, I kind of chuckled. I heard somebody talking earlier today, and they were like, I can't find this, and I can't find that, and everything that was coming out of them was a negative spin, and they were being told other things that were going on and told to look at their own life. They forgot what the magic in their life is. They forgot what the true blessings in their life were. And it's like they're so wrapped up in, you know, the material and the, you know, what everybody expects, the expectations and, you know, the craziness of the world, that they forgot to stop, breathe, and truly look at what was important in their life. And I think sometimes that's what people need to do. You need to just stop, you know. Lizzie was talking about it, and I was laughing because I had forgotten. I had written it a while ago. It was about, hey, we all got stuff. You know, we got so much stuff. You know, we got so much stuff. Why do we have stuff? We can't take it when we leave. And why do we accumulate it? You know, if we're done with stuff, we throw it in a closet, we throw it in a box, we throw it in a garage, we rent storage units for stuff. Why? Share it. If you don't need it right now, share it. Give it to somebody that can use it or appreciate it. If you're done appreciating it, it's just stuff. That's not what's important, you know. The stuff isn't what's important. It's the being with people. It's the sharing of time. Or if you hand stuff away and it's something, say, you had, you know, say it's a vase or a piece of artwork or something that you had for years and you just couldn't part it with it. But you give it to somebody, even if it's somebody in the family or one of the kids or one of the grandkids or, you know, a cousin. It doesn't matter. You give it to them and you see the joy on their face because they enjoy it. And you share with them the time or the story behind it. That's where you find the joy in life. That's where you find the spiritual, you know, that connection with people, that communication. And that's what people lack in their life. And for all of you that are looking for, wow, what's the purpose of my life? Wow, get rid of some stuff, you know?
Yeah, well, you know,
spend some time listening to somebody. Not listening, hear them.
Have you heard people say things like, I have to work really hard because I have to leave a legacy. I have to leave money so everybody can be taken care of and everything. And, you know, I keep thinking, you know what? The greatest legacy that you can leave is time. And just exactly what you've said, if you can spend time with someone, if you can give them time, you have given them the greatest gift that you have. And it takes no brains to open a wallet and whip out a checkbook or a credit card. It takes no talent, takes no brains, takes nothing. But it's a great gift to take some of the precious time you have in this life and share it with another person and listen and truly, truly listen. And don't turn around and hand them your stories. Listen to theirs because that's
hear
a legacy.
Their stories. Yeah. Hear their stories. Not just but hear them.
I mean, that is the greatest thing you can do for another person, or even do the random acts of kindness. I love those. I love going. I love going into the grocery store, and if I see someone who is older than me, and it takes a lot more these days to find them, but who's all alone shopping by themselves, and just, you know, say to them how pretty they look and how nice the color looks on them, and to just give them and to see the glow that comes from their face. It is just, it's precious. And you know that you've made their day, and they've made yours, because, you know, they don't expect it. You're a perfect stranger. You say it, and you move on. And random acts of kindness are the greatest thing in the world. I adore them. And if you don't get credit for one of them, it's even better. It's just, you know, I just love doing something really cool and walking away, and nobody knows who did it, but people appreciate it. I love that. That is so cool. So, you know, it's a legacy, and it's a wonderful kindness, and so many of us forget that it's so easy to do those things, and it doesn't take money. It just takes time.
Yep, I agree 100%. Random acts of kindness, that's a good thing.
Oh, I think they're so cool. And, you know, people call it paying forward, but I don't even worry about that. You know, I will admit that I have declared to the universe that I will not pay any more karmic debt this lifetime. They can roll it over to the next lifetime, and I'll never know what hit me.
Yeah, I just look at it like, how whack was I when I signed this contract to come down here? I'm done with all of it. No more.
Well, you know, I think when we do come into the lifetime, we've spent so much time on the other side that we've forgotten that from time to time it can be a struggle, and we get very ambitious sometimes, and sometimes we get overly ambitious. Every now and then I'll look at somebody's cards and I'll say, oh my God, you were so ambitious. What were you thinking? And it's true. I mean, you know, we do ask to be given situations that will allow us to evolve, to grow, to expand. And sometimes we get carried away with a checklist. You know, I think maybe there's a checklist there, and we just say, oh, check it all. And not remember that you come back in human form. And, you know, you have to struggle with your humanity, and you have to grow within it, and you are challenged by parents, teachers, the environment, the culture. And you know, yeah, every now and then I say the same thing. What was I thinking? You know, this is going a bit far and a bit much. I tell people I can't walk on water unless it's frozen, and I don't levitate unless somebody really scares the hell out of me. But, you know, but I am on a spiritual journey.
I actually had somebody that we both know that said, oh, you can levitate. You can walk on water if you put your mind to it. I'm like, okie dokie then. I don't really need to do that.
No. Well, you know, I think, you know, it was a good trick. It did prove a point. It proved a point about faith. And I think that's something that all of us need a little bit more of, but I do believe that we can move mountains, and we can do so much. And I do believe that in the far distance past, that there have been people in the Himalayas that have been able to levitate and have been able to do a lot of the stuff that we look upon as paranormal now, but it has in past times been a very common thing. And I'm hoping
working with elements, you know, now that I will say, you know, I have worked with elements. I know people that have worked with elements, and you can work with elements. I think it's an important part of what some of us do, you know, how we are. It's important to know how to pull the power and the strength from the elements when you need them. You know, that's a whole different thing. And, of course, like Glenna said, you know, her husband walks on water according to her aunt. So, I mean, you know, hey. Holy crap.
Unless she's seen it, I wouldn't buy it. No, I think we're capable of great things, and I think, you know, doubt and our humanity holds us down here and there, but I think we're coming to a time and a place where some are getting to a point where they're able to sort of transcend their physicality, and you know, I have moments. I mean, I'm sure you have too, where you astral travel at night, and you know, suddenly you're jerked back into your body. And you know, so I think slowly but surely we're getting to places and times where people that night travel is so cool and so much fun.
I'm gonna put a little lighter spin to that. I call what I do is dream walking, and I do a lot of lessons and I travel through it at that time, and it's kind of a place where you're in between sleep and awake. It's kind of a vision time. But when we get shoved back into our body very abruptly, whether it's a phone or an alarm or some loud noise or a cat pounces on your head or a dog comes by the side of the bed and says he's got to go out at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, that's what I call, this is what I call that. I call it that's the OJ syndrome, where your body doesn't go back in the way it came out right away, and it's like trying to force your hand inside that glove, you know.
Oh, geez, yeah.
So I call it the O.J. Simpson, syndrome. So
we've all experienced it.
Yeah,
and
that's what it is. Your spirit is not 100% in your body.
And the cool thing is, you know, if you allow that to happen, if you flow with it, I mean, you're not going to get lost out there. Nobody's going to cut the cord. But you know, that's you know, one of the other things like distant viewing is so exciting. And again, everybody's capable of it. It's just a matter of embracing it. So, I mean, there's a lot out there. But before we get too much closer to the end of this time, I want you to please share with everybody your large list of things that you're involved in and how to get a hold of you if they want to.
Well, I have the Wolf and the Bear Network here on BTR. And we are getting ready and preparing to launch our fall lineup of shows and guests coming up here probably the end of October. I'm producing and working with Lizzie over on Almost Heaven Radio Network. I assist you.
Yes, you do.
I'm doing, getting ready to open up my physical Bears Emporium. So not only do I have it on the web, but I will actually be expanding. That's why I haven't got much in it right now, because I'm expanding it and doing some other things and getting that all ready to rock and roll. I'm in school full-time, working on just completing my bachelor's for psychology, and then I'll be launching into my master's program. And, you know, I've got other things going on. I'm doing the artwork, you know, like I said, I'm doing the carving, and I'm doing the spirit walkers and pouches and all that stuff, getting stuff ready to rock. And one of the most exciting things for me is next month my tea line will be available. I've been working hard and diligent on my teas, and they are loose bulk teas and amazing teas, and I'm very excited about that. So, oh, and then, goodness sakes, Barbara, we have the magazine coming out in January.
Yes.
So, yeah,
yes.
A little busy. Just a
yes, I that's exciting. That's exciting. I think my big announcement is that Nightlight is going to now go back to its old time at 4 to 6 on Wednesday afternoons, and we're gonna be in the afternoon instead of the evening, and we probably will, you know, from time to time, do an evening interview show, but for the most part I'm putting even the interview shows from 4 to 6 too, because it enables me to get people in places like England and Australia. It's a better hour for them as well, so that and it's going to be pretty exciting. I have Grant Coulter, I can never pronounce his name right, but I have a wonderful English psychic who's going to be on with me on Tuesday the 1st of October, and we're going to do a show on Tuesday that's just going to be interviews so you can get to know him. He's really quite well known in England, and then on Wednesday he'll be reading on the show with me, so I'm really excited about that. And then end of the month we have my favorite. I love this title. We have Merry Monday with Mary Peeler. and I said
I
to
love
her, you
Mary.
Have to. I do too. I said to her, you have to do the show because I love the title of it. And she said, well, what if I can't? I said, I'll find another Mary who reads because I'm not going to let go of that title.
I love Mary.
She's remarkable. And I'm going to actually, now that the show is going to be in a more reasonable hour, I'm going to, you know, lasso Lizzie into a show here and there too, because it's in a time frame where she should be able to handle it. So I will
well,
book that.
Well, I just want to thank you because this is always wonderful, as usual, sitting and yakking with you and chatting with you, even though I've got toothpicks in my eyelids right now. It's all good. And I just want to thank everybody that stopped by or listening in archives or whatever. We appreciate it. And many blessings to all of you. Thank you so much for having me here tonight.
Oh, this has been, you know, such a treat for me because, you know, when you do the readings and you're doing them as fast as you can and as fast as you can and as fast as you can, people, I think, sometimes think that we just function in readings, and the reality is that almost every reader I know actually has a brain as well. And I mean, look at Anne. I mean, she is one of the most remarkable people I have ever met, and I love talking to her. You know, it's not that I don't like reading, because I enjoy it and I love it, but I also adore being able to you know, BS with other people who are in the spiritual field and doing spiritual things and compare notes and philosophies. And though I did publicize we were going to solve the problems of the world, and we didn't quite get to that. But
my life is truly blessed because I have many wonderful people on it, and Anne, I consider a dear sister, and I adore her. She's very, very gifted, and I'm very blessed to have you in my life, and Miss Lizzie, and Deb, Deb Schiller, you know, who is my sounding board often. I mean, it's just an amazing group of people that we've got around us, and I'm very grateful for that. So again, thank you, thank you.
Oh, my pleasure, my pleasure. I'm gonna let Cynthia Jordan play us out here. So at least
all right. Have a great night. Thank you again.
Oh, thank you so much, Barry. It has been such a pleasure. Hold on just a second because I want to make sure. Okay, there's that. And good night, everyone. there? Shoot.